Truth About Markets, New Zealand with Max and Stacy. Now, big news in New Zealand, Stacy. The anti-whaling activist Peter Bethune has been greeted by his family and supporters as he arrived back in New Zealand, a free man after being deported from Japan.
Wow, Mr. Bethune, 45, has been reunited with family behind closed doors at Auckland's airport's police station. Gaunt and wearing a sleeveless top to show his tattooed arms, he cried as he described being reunited with his wife and two daughters. Well, it was kind of, apparently he said he faced 15 years in jail, but received a suspended sentence as was deported from Tokyo. Wasn't he in international waters where there is no law, really?
Right. Well, this is an ongoing story because especially it's sensitive given what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico and the United States. Here's a group of environmentalists that have taken a different path to fight the environmental degraders. Their success is enormous. They have taken some innovative steps. Number one was to take their entire campaign to network television with a show called Whale Wars, where they turned their struggle into compelling TV drama. And as a result, you've got a global audience, huge support, and they are successful in terms of diminishing the number of whales that are slaughtered by the Japanese whalers who are operating illegally, according to the New Zealand folks, the Sea Shepherd crew. And you are in international waters, and the laws in international waters are murky, so it's not clear what's going on. But at the end of the day, he faced 15 years, but his sentence was suspended for 5 years because the judge said Mr. Bethune had no criminal record in Japan, had apologized and paid for damage he caused, and because he had said he would join no more Antarctic missions.
Oh, no. He's not going again.
Well, I read somewhere that he said he was anyway, that he was going to be involved. Maybe he'll be involved either on the front line or in support. I mean, it says no more Antarctic missions. I guess that implies he's not allowed to be in the Antarctic, but he can still be doing all kinds of support missions. You know, the Sea Shepherds have grown, and Captain Paul Watson is now Admiral Paul Watson. He commands a fleet of Sea Shepherds as they battle the whalers. And, of course, the whaling battle has been going on for decades, and it was one of the first high-level, high-visibility campaigns that the environmentalists took on. And they've been, you know, successful from time to time. But the overwhelming trend...
The overwhelming trend is, yeah?
Was they, for example, Japan... is still whaling. I think Iceland, I believe, has said that they're going to increase the quota of whales that they'll be hunting. So this is still very much a battle that's been going on. The Sea Shepherd battle is, as we've been saying on this show for a while, one of the reasons we like it is because Captain Paul Watson simply talks about economics and says basically that we can just make it economically unviable. He doesn't waste time with the morality of it. He doesn't waste time with the legality of it. Doesn't waste time with any of the nuances. He just says, look, less whales for them means it's non-economic and they'll just stop because it doesn't make them any money. And they're not into it for research. They're not in it for anything but making cheap profits at the expense of irreplaceable organisms that took millions of years to evolve to slaughter them for a quick buzz. It's beyond, really, the criminal crimes we've seen on land. That have brought about things like the tribunals against war crimes and other courts of justice to address the sickening behavior we see in humans every once in a while. This is probably the worst of the worst.
Well, but the whale wars, the Sea Shepherd actually does other stuff. So they've also, in this summer alone, they've freed some bluefin tuna from Libyan ships, which I guess they say were being fished illegally. But they're also, they just won $15,000 with our help, by the way, when from eBay. And they're using that $15,000 to go to run some operations. I'm not sure yet what they're doing, but down in the Gulf of Mexico, where, you know, the U.S. Coast Guard is forbidding anybody to go within 65 feet of any of the oil spill. Journalists are being prevented from reporting on the BP oil eco disaster. And but the Sea Shepherd is going down there.
Yeah. You know, you bring something up. It's interesting. The $15,000 that was raised via eBay that goes to the Sea Shepherd. And it contrasts that with the story this past week of the Perfect Citizen Program and the U.S.'s win against the European Union to now monitor all SWIFT transactions in the global wiring and money transfer system. So these, and as relates to the people plugging into these social networking sites, and what we were saying is that if, in fact, you were to give Sea Shepherd $5, this $5 amount is recorded in the database of folks at various intelligence agencies and through the social networking sites and through search engines. And potentially, you risk having your experience online changed, either being routed through slower servers, being cut off completely, or having virtual debt appear in your online account that you have to work off by clicking and watching things that they want you to watch. If you're watching Sea Shepherd Whale Wars and you're not watching LeBron James talk about his basketball career, you're not helping the folks that are controlling the internet. So if you spend time in ways that they don't want you to spend time, then it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you either through increase in the amount of virtual debt that you owe, or they'll slow down your access, which will make it harder for you to interact, or they'll just cut you off completely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you'll be thrown in jail if you try to help yourself, because like this Paul Bethune, he did admit to boarding the whaling ship, the Japanese whaling ship, which is an act of piracy, is considered on the international waters, i.e. just like Israel boarded the Turkish ship in international waters as an act of piracy. But he did it, Paul Bethune did it, because the Japanese had just rammed a ship and it was his boat and it was sinking.
Right.
So it was illegal for him to board the ship. By, you know, he should have just fallen into the icy waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they brought a tremendous amount of attention to their cause, and they're winning the war against the whalers, I think. Whale wars, I think they're winning the war. And, you know, you also bring up an interesting point about prison and jail. Now, flashback 100 years. If, in fact, you were going to live outside of community standards, you could, if you wanted to, be a homeless person, and you could survive. You could beg for money on the street, and you could buy some quarter beer and a loaf of bread down at the discount store, and you know, you could survive, but and without going to jail. But now, going forward, you know, every single penny will be tracked pretty carefully through database, which is tied into an electronic card, a swipe card, and people won't have loose change in their pockets, so you won't be able to beg out in the meat space, as it's called, the analog space, and you won't be able to, the only way you're going to be participating in life going forward is vis-a-vis the internet, vis-a-vis social networking sites. So, if you're not going to participate in society, you won't be able to live outside of society. And all that has to happen for to put you in effectively in jail is to just delete you from the database. So if you're cut off entirely from even the ability to beg for money, you very quickly will starve to death. And you don't need to build a prison. You don't need to put people in jail. Just by corralling them into, just by cutting them off from access to the network, they, within a certain number of days, will die from starvation. And I think this is going to save a lot of money for the virtual prison operators and casino gulag operators, who will welcome this opportunity, you know, like a duck to water. This is going to increase, fatten up their bottom line tremendously. They don't even have to bother building prisons anymore for people who they deem to be dissident and opposing their worldview. Well, much more of this fun stuff coming your way. So don't go away. This is Truth About Markets New Zealand with Max and Stacy on RDU in Christchurch, New Zealand. So don't go away. We're back. Yeah, it's Truth About Marcus New Zealand with Max and Stacy.
Yeah, and you were talking about, you know, the NSA Perfect Citizen program where they're going to be monitoring the entire global internet infrastructure in order to protect us from cyber attacks, from terrorists, those avatar terrorists that we can just generate online.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I noticed this week was... I'm going to have to find it who did it, but I believe it was some left-wing, you know, or a liberal sort of economist, financial commentators who were noting that with a positive spin that we're going to move to a cashless society. There will be no cash. They were looking at it as a positive thing because they allege that it'll stop criminals from operating.
Right.
So you won't be able to set up bogus shops, for example, to launder money, which these people are so naive that they really think that criminals are not, you know, the master mafia criminals are going to like suddenly disappear. Is Goldman Sachs going to disappear? Is the NSA going to disappear? Is the CIA, are they going to stop? Do they want the global economy to crash without that black market money? That's the source of liquidity.
Mm-hmm. It also takes away a major impetus behind economic growth. People like to hold money, and they like to make money, and it's exciting. If you take all that away, a lot of people will just not be motivated to go out and work much because they don't even get to hold the money. What's
well,
the point?
Plus, if they tried to do that, I guarantee you they would lose control of it because they would not be able to stop people from wanting things that are illegal. Like if you're only going to be able to buy heroin with a credit card, obviously it's going to be seen, but people will come up with their own currency as they have done for a hundred thousand years. You know, they'll find something else to trade. They'll start bartering. They'll start coming up with an alternative currency, gold, silver, which you obviously cannot track.
Well, in the case of pornography, which is illegal, the pornography industry still uses credit cards by masking those accounts and by making it easy for people to buy pornography using a credit card. Gambling is illegal. That people still, to some degree, use credit cards, and they clamp down on credit cards. And then because in America, online gambling is illegal, although now it's becoming legal in other countries like France, notably. And so... as you point out, there will be workarounds for the criminal syndicates, and nothing is going to stop them. And the point is that instead of trying to modulate people's behavior, I think what would be a better idea is to give somebody something else to do with their time that's exciting and interesting, and they can make money. I mean, this is one of the things on this show, is that I've got nothing against markets. I've got nothing against capitalism. But it has to be architected in a way that serves the community. You know, if you're going to build a building, you know, you have to do it in a way that it doesn't fall down and crash on people and kill them. You know, you have to build a building according to certain set rules of architecture. You have to put in plumbing, you have to put in a front door, you have to put in windows. You know, if you're building a capital society, there needs to be a way to distribute the risk and reward equitably so that you have a functioning community. You don't build it like Goldman Sachs does, where it's we siphon cash from the exchange using high-frequency trading all day. You get nothing. You can drop dead. That's not capitalism. That's not free markets. That's robbery. That's thievery. But if architected correctly, fine, great. You know, you have an incentive. People like to prosper. You know, it goes back to the million-year-old battle of the sexes. Men will always try to impress women by showing them how freaking talented they are, by doing crazy, stupid economics tricks, going out there and starting companies, make a new laptop computer, make a new cell phone. You know, this is all driven by men's need to impress women. It goes back millions of years, you know, the stick fighting of the African tribes. You know, it's all basically the same thing. But if you take away the incentive, you're just left with basically eunuchs who are bumping into each other and trying to score free virtual dope so they can swap it for a slice of processed cheese. There's nothing left.
Yeah, but these idealists, these naivists, they're very naive to think that the Gulag Casino police state mafia does not want you to commit crimes. They thrive on criminality, on your criminality. They thrive on you wanting, they create things that are illegal precisely in the area where they know you will seek. They criminalize certain behaviors because they know you will seek that and do that behavior. So they need to have something to blackmail you with to force you to be obedient. They're not after arresting everybody. They're arresting people just like with Putin arrests the oligarchs that seek to undermine him or seek political or suddenly have political ambition. He didn't care about the ones that didn't have political ambitions.
Yeah, well, we saw a great example of that at the G20. They spent $1.25 billion or $1.25 billion on beefing up security. They had no events through the entire G20 process. Everything was calm, and people were just protesting calmly. And to justify the $1.25 billion spent on defense in the last couple of days, the police and the government staged some riots.
Yes, exactly. And that was captured on camera, by the way, of these so-called anarchists getting out of their anarchist outfits and putting back on their military garb,
yeah.
Like looking, very different from what they were on the black masked, rioters and anarchists.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, the U.S. and the allies will kill some Afghanis and then spend millions and billions of dollars doing so. And then one Afghani somewhere will throw a rock at somebody, and then they'll put that on television and say, see, our multi-billion-dollar war effort is justified. One of our soldiers got hit in the head with a rock.
So between this, in the past week, we saw that the EU is now allowing the U.S. to access all the data flow of financial transactions. And we've also seen the NSA in America now introducing this software system throughout the architecture, the infrastructure of the internet, which is called Perfect Citizen, monitoring everything against, they say they're there to protect you from cyber attacks. So presumably we're going to see a cyber attack very soon or an act of cyber anarchism, which
mm-hmm.
could be a false flag sort of thing, a provocateur looking like they're, it's probably going to be an NSA, exercise that will be presented in the news as a real attack.
Yeah, well, they have to set the stage for some new existential threat in cyberspace to justify all this money being spent on cybersecurity. And we see evidence of this already with the Russian spy scandal, where they're kind of testing the waters on different kinds of international scandals to migrate away from the bearded man with the fanatical story that's been keeping people under the bed frightened for the last 10 years or so. And as people get radical fatigue of that type, they're, testing the waters to see, well, can we get them scared with some white people here with some crazy Russians? Can we get them scared with some cyber? We'll see where's their weakness. Just like a casino operator with a massive database does the profiling of people using the frequent casino goer card, the swipe card, to figure out what their emotional vulnerabilities are. And then they make sure to hit them on those emotional vulnerabilities, whether they have a certain maybe addictive personality that they gravitate toward food or cocktails or sex or certain color, certain scents that they have a cognitive bias toward. They will make sure that they use that information to induce the customer into getting further into debt. So you see the global terrorists at the various intelligence agencies kind of just testing the waters to see where the easiest bang for the buck now is. Where are people's fears today? Because the fanatical bearded crazy man hijacker thing has kind of been played out. So they have to come up with some new soft spots to probe to find where they can next insert the $1 trillion debt load into the corpus of what is quickly becoming a dying global infrastructure. Now we've got plenty more show coming your way after the break on New Zealand Radio. Isn't that so?
Yeah. Yeah, you should see the image on our edit screen here. Your claps look very...
Looks like Argyle.
It does.
Looks like a couple of Argyle socks. scrolling across the screen. We'll come back with our next phase of this show right after this, so don't go away. This is time to get right back. We're back. We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of New Zealand.
The wonderful wizard of New Zealand. Well, you know, I saw some currency stories in the news this week that apparently the central banks of the world are divesting themselves of dollars. But this time, they're not going into the euro. They're going into the Canadian dollar and the Australian dollar. No mention of the New Zealand dollar, the Kiwi, as right. It's called.
That's right. I saw that. They're diversifying out of the dollar into these other currencies. Australian dollar, Canadian dollar.
So they're resource currencies.
Yeah. Well, the resource-based currencies. And you got oil is is still, even though they have global deflation, and even though the Chinese economy is rumored to be teetering on the abyss, oil is still hanging in there at the higher prices. Because I think now, you know, you have to consider peak oil. The fact that the total production of oil, the easy production of oil, it peaked a few years ago, and the world is running out of oil. And I think this is now a big factor in keeping the price higher because there's just less of it. And it's not like people are going to stop using oil. You know, that would be like saying a bunch of lemmings are going to stop from jumping off the side of a cliff. You know, it's just not, it's in their nature to do so. It's not going to happen. And people are not going to suddenly magically get into their own self-interest frame of mind and stop using, you know, oil. No, that's not going to happen. So price should stay high. And Canada is a huge
tar sands
oil place. And I think this is what's turned Canada into the ugly country it's become in the last 10 or 15 years. You know, it's no longer the image of the good-hearted Canadian. Somehow this had an image of the wide open wilderness, and Canadians were some, you know, gave great health care for their people, and they concerned about folks. Because of oil, they've turned into nasty centrally planned
neoconservative. They've become very neoconservative, of like needing to change the actions and behaviors of everybody else. It's always about other people. We need to fix them. We need to change how they are. Mm-hmm. Those people 4,000 miles away, we need to change how they are. We don't like the way they are.
Right. So this should support the price of oil. And so we see that trending higher. And
well, of course, Canada needs it to be very high, because otherwise they don't have this booming tar sands industry, because you need it to be... it costs a lot. It takes a lot of energy to extract the tar sands, oil from the tar sands.
Well, that's right. So by actually buying into the Canadian dollar, you've given the Canadian dollar the ability to be leveraged up in a big way to help finance the wars. So I'd imagine that Canada is now like Japan, though they consider themselves to be pacifist. Japan has been the biggest source of funds to commit mass genocide in the Middle East on the end of the spear tip of the U.S. and the U.K. for years. So Canada now is entering the big genocide leagues. Congratulations, Canada. You're now a genocidal maniac.
Yeah, but the other thing is, like, many Americans in particular, but many people around the world have this 2 minutes of hate for Al Gore. They have this irrational hate, and that they're talking about, oh, you know, man-made global warming doesn't exist, and we hate Al Gore, and Al Gore, he's going to control our world. He's going to introduce a tax on energy and blah, blah, blah. But in the real world, where all these policies are being determined, the investments, the central banks, the governments are betting on tar sands, and they're investing billions of dollars. These people who are these corporations who run the show, they know that it's all like fake, and this they're you know, like herding people into this hatred and the cult of hatred of an individual in order to distract from the reality of what's going on. Canada is being torn apart. Like, tar sands is a very ugly business, and they're just like, if they really believed, if these corporations who control the show were ever going to do anything to listen to Al Gore, they would be investing their capital differently.
Oh yeah. Well, Al Gore is the Copernicus of our times. You know, he dared to tell the truth, and he got stoned for it. Now, he made that film An Inconvenient Truth, which basically took all of the so-called doubt in the climate change global warming debate and removed it with incontrovertible evidence and a brilliant presentation that put into people's face the fact that the world was on a very short timeline in terms of the carbon per parts per million that was going to contribute to premature human extinction. But it was so compelling and so brilliant and so well made that...
He's just like Michael Moore. It's like hating Michael Moore and thinking Michael Moore has any power over you. All he's doing was pointing out other people's data, other scientists' data. He himself, Al Gore, in the film, is flying around in a private jet everywhere and making zero comment about it. So the fact that he has become this cult figure in kind of a way that the very same people who actually hate Al Gore also hate Michael Moore, as if Michael Moore has any say over policy that happens. He's just showing, you know, facts on the ground, or, you know, obviously he has his own opinion about things, but, you know, they're shooting the messenger.
Mm. Right. Well, I mean, the film was so well made that the folks that feed into the climate Holocaust denial industry, like Murdoch and Fox News, they really had to go into overtime to discredit Al Gore, and this is why he's now involved in all kinds of salacious sex scandals and things of this nature, because they really had to focus a lot of energy into to counteract the facts that he was presenting in his film, An Inconvenient Truth. Similarly, Copernicus, once he suggested that, in fact, the Earth revolved around the sun and not the other way around, he became an object of derision and was forced out of town. Or Galileo, or anyone who's come forward with vital, unimpeachable truth, this that goes against the prevailing psychosis, is immediately branded a heretic and run out of town.
Yeah, or just giving evidence, just giving data to normal people. Denis Diderot, when he wrote the Encyclopedia, he caused absolute riots in the Senate in France for the fact that he published a book which gave information about all aspects of life to normal people, which the rulers did not want the people to know, and they were very angry.
I wonder, at what point did we hit peak America?
I think it was probably quite a while ago.
70s? 1970s?
Sorry, well, put your answers in an email. Send it to us, or put it online. Go to maxkaiser.com and put it in the comments section. Yeah. Tell us
when did we hit peak America?
Yeah.
Because clearly we've hit peak America. I think it's got to be 1969, man landing on the moon. I think, and you had the New York Jets win the Super Bowl. The New York Mets won the World Series. I think that was peak America that year, 1969. All right, bye, y'all.